I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, ahoy, everybody, and welcome to Talk to the Audience, and this is 2020. I am one of your hosts for this one, Bob Mackey, who is here with me today.
John Stossel hater, Henry Gilbert.
Oh, he won't be making an appearance on this episode of 2020. But yes, welcome to actually the last Talk to the Audience of 2019. We're a few days late with this. We both are traveling for the holidays and sort of recovering from travel and all of the stuff we were doing leading up to our travel holiday. So we appreciate your patience, and we are here to talk about what's happening in the Simpsons world and our world, and to also address your questions and comments from the episodes from December of 2019.
Yeah, we had a real rejuvenating holiday break, I think. But it was, you know, that thing even at my office jobs where it's like December 30th or January 2nd. I'm like, oh, it's time to rev this back up again. We're the work machine.
And even when you take a break, it's like the day after. It's like, all right, now time to plunge through the inbox and salvage for gold.
Yes, yeah. But we, man, I hope all of you listeners had a very happy holidays, no matter what you celebrate. And I hope you closed out the 2010s with gusto.
Yeah, so to start off, I do want to say this will be the last paywalled episode of Talk to the Audience, as we outlined in our end of December update. The last slot of the month for Talking Simpsons will now just be Talk to the Audience. So from now on, this will be pushed to the free feed, and this will be the last numbered episode from this point onward. We're just going to be naming them after the month and the year, just so they're easier to keep track of for all of you out there.
Now, you Patreon subscribers, though, you'll still get this a week ahead of time.
That is true.
And free. So it'll still be special in that way. Plus, the $1 folks will still get this as well. This will be your one that you get. We're not taking that away as well. So, yeah we, in case you guys still haven't checked it out, we did a podcast about it and a whole post describing it. But yes, we are slightly scaling back our weekly podcasts in 2020 just because 2019 was a very productive year for us, but also a taxing one.
Our respective partners are worried about us a little bit.
Yeah. You have to listen to our partners are also patrons as well. So we need to listen to them just as much as anyone.
And some of them are guests and do the art. But I didn't say this in that end of December update, but one thing I saw echoed in the comments, which I was happy to see, is like, I can't catch up. Thank you so much for stopping. Well, not stopping, but slowing down a little bit. Because that's what we hear from like almost all of our guests and friends. The second we see them, they're like, oh my God, I'm so behind on your podcast.
Yeah, I feel bad for, I won't embarrass them by naming them, but friends we've like had back on his podcast are like, I'm so sorry I'm not caught up. I didn't listen to podcast X, Y, or Z yet. And I'm just like, please, don't. You don't have to apologize. We do make too much.
They all fail the quiz we give them.
Yes, yeah. I mean, speaking of our wonderful partners, yours even did this very eye-opening list of, on the Talk Simpsons podcast Twitter, a list of all the stuff we made in 2019. I was like, that is a lot.
Yes,
we really made a lot of stuff.
Also, rankings of the longest podcasts we made in the year. And yes, check it out at Talk Simpsons Pod. They're easy to find as of this recording, those end of the year rankings. And you might be surprised.
Yeah, it was funny though, the longest one of 2019 was instantly beat by 2020's first one as the longest one. Like the 30, can you believe 30 Minutes Over Tokyo was our longest one? Like longer than Poochie, longer than Roasting on an Open Fire. Like it was the longest one.
I can't believe me, you, and Maddie talk more than we did with three other white guys in the
room. I know. Well, you ask a bunch of weebs to talk about Japan and a Simpsons episode.
That's what you get.
That's what you get.
So I guess we could talk a little bit about what we did on vacation. If anybody out there is interested, it was a lot of fun downtime. And I rarely watch movies because I currently live on my own. And if I have any downtime, I'm like, well, of course, I'm going to play a video game and listen to a podcast. It's like the ultimate relaxing thing for me to do.
Yes, yeah.
But when I'm with a partner, it's always fun to see a movie, talk about the movie. So I saw a ton of movies over the break. And I don't know if anybody wants to hear opinions about Rise of the Skywalker. As of this moment, I think you might have heard them all.
The Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, I'm sorry. Jeez. There's more than one.
Yes, yeah.
But so I saw that. I'll go over a list of movies I saw. So when I got in to Vancouver, hanging out with Nina, I saw It's a Wonderful Life in theaters.
Oh, nice.
My second time seeing it in theaters, and dear God, I love that movie so much. And
yeah.
It fucking rips me apart every time.
Yeah, me too. This was the first year in a while I didn't watch it in full with my family, but I did. I saw it in theater once, but it was, I guess it really shouldn't count, but it was at the community college I went to when I was taking a film class. They had the auditorium to play movies in, and so it basically was a cinema setting, and we watched it together like that. But I've never seen it in actual like revival theater to pay like, here's my money, show me this movie.
It's so worth it, especially if you're watching it on Christmas Eve.
Oh,
perfect time to watch it.
Oh my gosh.
And I mean, I don't need to tell you, it's a fun, good movie. Please see it. But it's interesting, if you've never seen it, how all the parodies of the movie, they're only parodying the last like 25 minutes of the movie. But my favorite scene in the movie is the scene that gets me to feel the hardest. It's when George Bailey comes home before he decides to kill himself and has the worst, most weepiest day ever, realizing what a shambles his life is, and everything is just ripping him apart. And it rips me up inside. It's so good.
You mean when he says to, like, I got to put on a brave face for my children?
Yes, and yes.
They're putting the
tinsel on his head.
And they're like, come on, George. And he's like, okay. Yeah, he's shut down.
Why do we have so many kids anyway?
Yeah.
I love that line.
I agree, George. You shouldn't have. It was a mistake.
Yes. Especially if you make no money. But yeah, so I saw that. I saw Rise of the Skywalker. I saw a lot of random movies. So Nina had never seen Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yes.
We watched that together.
I saw now she can listen to that movie podcast.
Yes. She's been enjoying it. She spread the word about how I wore a shirt that said Bone Daddy on it.
Yeah, that's...
a shirt.
Well, that's so funny because she is a somewhat goth person, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that was like too mainstream of goth for her.
I don't know how she missed it, but we liked it. I mean, I love it, and she liked it too. She didn't realize it was mostly songs, but she really enjoyed it. And so I also saw, together we watched the MST3K Santa Claus, which is a tradition of mine. So funny. We also saw She Should Be Anastasia, which I've never seen before. Very weird movie where I kind of want to talk about it for what a cartoon movie at some point, because it's a bizarre movie that's very rotoscoped in a very eerie way. But for about 80% of the movie, the villain exists in like another dimension. He's like barely in the movie, to the point where in the musical, he's not even in the musical based on the animated movie. They just take him out. They take him out entirely.
Well, and his Disney villain death at the end is an especially horrifying one, isn't it?
It's like real Don Bluth nightmare fuel. And we also saw Tokyo Godfathers.
Ah, good times.
And I think that's it. But yeah, it was interesting going from...
Oh, no Spider-Man Far From Home? I thought
we didn't
you guys
see
were going to check that out.
I didn't even think about that. But it was interesting seeing... So I won't talk about Star Wars at all.
Oh,
maybe
all right.
Maybe a little we could talk about it. But it was interesting seeing like a crusty, old, hokey movie like It's a Wonderful Life and having it just tear my soul apart and rebuild me by the end and just feel so good walking out of the theater. And sitting through Rise of Skywalker and feeling nothing.
Nothing.
Being entertained, but feeling no emotion throughout the entire movie. And that's my comparison right there. Just like so weird. Like you couldn't even make me feel. You have all this money in that old hokey movie that was a failure in the 40s. Just rips me apart. And I love it.
Star Wars for me was, I didn't love it either. My reaction in watching it was hearing lines of dialogue. I was so my expectations were lowered because reviewers were actually saying, like, I don't think this is very good. I'm like, oh, if that's what you're saying. That's like when you would see, like, IGN give something a 7 or a 6. You'd be like, oh, then this is a 0. Like, if you guys are giving it that, a game that. So when I saw Star Wars, I had low expectations. But when characters just said things that made no sense just to move things forward. Well, this is a thing in the trailer. The exploding out of his own army of ships from the Earth, and they just fly around and are staffed as a fleet of ships. I'm like, what the fuck? How? Like, there's 18 of those things that just make me go like, really?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to cut out the spoiler we just gave just in case anybody has not seen it. But
yeah.
I will say that I was stifling open laughter. That's the one thing that made me feel in the movie was when they're discussing a very ridiculous plot point that is new in this movie. And it's just like blah, blah, blah happened somehow. Let's move on. And yep. I was just like, I almost like had to leave the theater. I was laughing so hard. It was just like, it was sort of like the John Swartzwelder script line, for some reason, yeah. comma. And then you could put the Star Wars plot point in there. It could be a John Swartzwelder script.
Yeah, it was one of those things too where it just, oh, also there, everyone knows Carrie Fisher's in the film. The way they use their old footage to puppet her into the movie, it's wrong. They shouldn't have done it.
Felt like they were so capitalizing on her death. Like, yeah. she's here, but she's also gone, and that's the last time you'll see her.
Just cheap, like, emotion.
They didn't have a good movie to make, so they propped it up with her corpse. It sucks.
Yeah, it's wrong. And then also, it was something that made me retroactively like Force Awakens less, because I see JJ set up these things in Force Awakens that then led to nothing and nowhere and were meaningless. So just those things work is set up when you imagine something good comes, but I mean that's lost all over again. It's all of his things, so who cares. Well, I saw some other movies too though.
Yay.
I didn't see It's a Wonderful Life, but I watched a different hokey old movie that was very heartwarming, The Bishop's Wife.
Have you ever heard of it?
Oh, well, if you remember in our youths, there was The Preacher's Wife with Whitney Houston and Denzel Washington, where an angel comes to help a preacher with a big project he has. Have you heard of this movie?
Mm-hmm.
And well, also, if you're a fan of Wonderful Life, Zuzu and young George Bailey, those kid actors are in the movie.
Really?
So, yeah. And it's another Christmas movie with his kids. But
also, why is that kid named Zuzu? That always confused me. Zuzu's Petals.
But in the plot of it is that Cary Grant is this Chad angel who comes down, and Edward Niven prays for an angel to come and save his church. Like, he really wants to build a big cathedral. And so Cary Grant is like, well, I'm going to teach you what you actually need is to reconnect with your hot wife. And if you don't, I will, buddy. And so you get to see this fun thing of, like, it really gets to play around of, like, you have an actual angel in the movie. He's like, oh, I'm from beyond time. I'm ageless. I'm an angel. But also, I am a hot guy who wants to fuck your wife, and she kind of wants it too, buddy.
Oh, like, man, Cary Grant rules, and he has his own accent that no one has ever had before, and he was also way into LSD and marijuana and bisexual.
Oh,
so, yeah.
Oh, wow. And, well, also in Bishop's Wife, if you want to see some old-timey special effects that are supposed to really impress you, it's like, oh, that's good. It's I really enjoy it. I've never seen it before. Also, in the theaters, I saw Little Women, the Greta Gerwig Little Women. Pretty good. I've never read the book. I've only seen film adaptations. If you grew up with our childhood's Winona Ryder one, that's very, like, straightforward.
Yeah.
This actually remixes things quite a lot more, and it's a lot more postmodern.
I'm just thinking of the critic parody Little Men.
Oh, yeah.
With Dudley Moore, Michael J. Fox, and Tom Cruise.
And also, to bring us back to The Simpsons, I saw a very funny tweet saying, like, It was deep into my English essay that I learned that they don't actually say they were no longer little girls, but little women.
That's a great, like, very bad reading of that book that Mo was doing.
I saw the movie Knives Out. That was pretty good.
I thought that was great. It was sort of like Rian Johnson's revenge.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I think friend of the show Jack Allison said that's like the worst part of a good movie is that he makes all of his Twitter nemesises the villains of the movie, kind of.
That's great.
But it's a very interesting 70s-style murder mystery. I really, really liked it a lot.
That's awesome.
But I'll tell you what I loved is Uncut Gems.
It's
a dude movie for dudes, I will say that. But, like, it is, I hate to say it, but Adam Sandler, I think, deserves an Oscar nomination at least for it.
That's what's frustrating, because he can do good work.
Yep, if he
maybe
wants to.
The Happy Madison train is, like, screeched to a halt or maybe exploded. Maybe now he has to do legitimate acting.
Yeah, well, I think he just does it every 5 years to prove he can, and then he's like, all right, back to vacation.
What was between Punch Drunk Love and this?
Well, he thought Funny People was one of those movies.
Oh, yeah, but it terrible, not good.
It was supposed to be one of those movies.
Longer than Star Wars, I think.
But yes, I think it is. But anyway, yeah, Uncut Gems, really, really good. Kevin Garnett also, the basketball player, does a really good job playing himself.
Interesting, okay.
It's actually, it's full of real people who they just cast of like, you look weird. You're a weird person. There's few stars in it. Like they also got this sex worker / Instagram model, Julia Fox, to play a major role in it. And she's great. Anyway. And then on the two last things I'll mention I saw was Noel. I watched that Disney movie on Disney Plus, the Disney Plus exclusive. It was fine, like Hallmark original movie kind of thing to watch with your family. It's the funniest part is how fucking cheap it is, because they're like, well, for the middle of the movie, we're going to spend it all at this real mall in Arizona, and we're just hanging out at a mall.
And there are no extras.
Yes. No, it's just, and is they're like, time to meet the guy who works at PetSmart and the lady who works at Foot Locker. Like, it's just all commercials. It's terrible. But, you know, Anna Kendrick and Bill Hader and Billy Eichner, they're all funny people.
I had the lamest joke about movies I got right to Disney Plus. There's a movie called Togo. It's like, go right to Disney Plus, buddy. Not good enough for theaters.
Oh, and the last one I saw was Pottersville, which it was a We Hate Movies, but I hadn't heard that episode.
Yeah, I really need to see it after hearing that episode.
So we just had Netflix open. This was not my pick, but my stepdad was like, I'll just open up Netflix. We'll watch something Christmassy. Now, the name Potterville will make you think it's related to It's a Wonderful Life. It is not. It's not even like a fake sequel to it. It is one of the most nonsensical movies I've ever seen. Before they played it, I was like, well, I definitely want to see this. This has every actor I like. Michael Shannon, Ian McShane, Christina Hendricks, lots of people.
Good old Julie Kavner.
Yeah. So I have a surprise for Bob here. I've been telling him behind the scenes. At my Christmas, it wasn't just about watching movies, it was about rediscovering Simpsons memorabilia as well. I tweeted about some of these, but now I have them in person that I can show off to Bob. So first off was this gift I got. Simpsons Pictionary.
Wow. How old is that? It looks like it was in the window of some store for a while.
That's what my mom apologized for. She's like, this was released in 2002, so I think it seriously spent over a decade in a window. But
those pieces in there are baked.
It's brand new, though.
Oh, cool.
I said, if we play together with Nina, she has to use like her left hand, her non-dominant
hand. Mouth
or something. Yes. But then also I discovered some old Simpsons things that have been with me since childhood that my mom bothered to bring with her across the country.
I have that game. Yeah. I have it at my apartment, and I've carried it with me for, let me think, almost 30 years.
This is the Deluxe Simpsons Mystery of Life. Yeah.
Oh,
this,
Deluxe. I don't know if I have Deluxe version. Interesting.
I don't know what the difference is for Deluxe or not.
It'd be fun to like play that on a stream or something. I swear to God, it's so weird. They only take season one references.
Yeah. I haven't played it in 8 million years.
As a kid, I played that alone. I played a lot of board games alone, and that was one of them. But yeah,
I played it with my brother. What's funny in that one, too, like you can tell the most of it is just that, you know, the front-facing Bart slingshot family thing. But I swear they redrew Lisa and Maggie. They're like, they look shitty.
Maybe even Homer.
Yeah, I think they did. So that is my vintage game of life I had since childhood. Me and my brother played it probably twice ever.
And like, there's even Tracy Ullman jokes on here. Like, one of the squares is a burping contest.
Oh,
which
yes.
Is a Tracy Ullman short.
I remember that challenge.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Boy, that's going to be a tough one to do on a stream. Yeah. Okay. And then I also found...
Where can I put this so it doesn't... Oh!
Here, I'll put it back.
Another box. This is great. I just saw this in a game store, I think.
Yes, it is Simpsons Clue.
And I always like how Smithers is the French maid.
Yes, yeah. This one I never played. It was I feel bad that when my mom told me about it, I was like, oh, you gave me that as a gift like 10 years ago, and it's just been sitting here.
That's killer, yeah. I do like Clue. It's been a while since I played it, but...
I like a game of Clue. And that one also doesn't... make people burp or draw things. So, a couple more things real quick.
Oh, Who Killed Mr. Burns is part of this plot here.
That's pretty good.
Can I hand this back to you? There you go. Yeah.
Okay, and then lastly, I tweeted about these. They were so awesome to find. My old Simpsons calendars, my beat up old ones, including 93 and 91. 91. The original Simpsons calendar, right
there. I'll
have
to have Nina critique the art in here. By, I'm guessing Bill Morrison drew all this.
He said, he actually, I asked him on Twitter because in 90. For the 93 calendar, I swear he drew everything. This looks exactly like
art direction by Millie Smythe or Smith. We've heard her name come up a lot. She did all the art in this
Bill Morrison did say he did some of that.
Okay.
Because when I tweeted about the...
There's a picture of them all being blown in the wind, and Bart says, I hate this damn wind.
The funniest thing, I think in most of them, that they drew them without a word balloon, but they're like, Bart needs to say something. Look at those toothless mouths in the water one.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
We're describing pictures here.
Get ready for season two of The Simpsons. They're in a field of flowers. Bart says, I feel itchy. Bart has not mowed the lawn in June. stickers on this Bart. It's like a Playboy
centerfold.
That's
my custom. Yes. Yeah. Well, so all of these calendars, they always have a middle part that it can become a poster. And I always had these posters up in my home. So,
which one is that? I think I had the mini version of that.
So I also found 02 and 03 as
okay.
well. Wow. 03, I think, is the best one because it really is like good episodes. Hey, remember all these episodes? We redrew scenes from
them. I think I did buy that one. So this is another one, July 91, describing a picture here. Bart has eaten too many watermelons and his face is green, violating a Macaroni rule.
Yeah.
Macaroni says you could never change their skin colors.
This breaks every rule. Also, it doesn't have all the fun like things on the dates of like some crazy birthdays. Yeah. No, this, I mean, I think probably every future calendar was a response to this calendar being kind of crappy.
Yeah. What does Bart say? Bring on the grub.
Yeah.
Space Mutants reference on December. Instead of reading a Christmas Carol book, he's reading Space Mutant comics.
That should be Radioactive Man for one. And Homer's face is all wrong in that too. But yeah. And then the 93 one, that's the most fun one, but also the most water damaged of my ones. But you can flip through it a little bit here.
Nice. Yeah. Ooh, 93. Yeah. What a year to be alive.
It's the family travels around the world. So you get to see, that's my favorite one. Bart has frozen to death in Antarctica, and Homer is telling him, like, get out of that ice cube.
I'm getting ready for season 5 of The Simpsons in this calendar.
And all those things that happen on the dates, too. Like, I love the little drawings on the dates where they talk about, Maggie even has a thought balloon, which does break another rule.
Like, I do like these. They got rid of the characters giving little facts.
Yeah, yeah, it's nice. But again, I feel like Morrison probably drew most of those. He seemed to remember. Yeah,
for some reason, Marge is wearing a different colored dress in every one of these.
And that middle one, Have a Nice Day. I just got a message from, you know, Bart of Darkness, Simpsons collector, showing off that he just bought a nicer old copy of this and put up that Have a Nice Day poster on his wall. Because it's a nice picture of Bart.
When you were tweeting about these, I did post Homer's, like, what if it's 1985 again? What then?
Yeah.
And you actually got me a gift, and it's the 2020 calendar.
That's
which
right.
Which is great, because I've been very busy, and it helps me to keep track of when we're recording and when what things go live when, and I've been using a dry erase board, but I like this because there's fun drawings on it, so I like this a lot.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Yeah, my mom has gotten me Simpsons calendars since that 1991 one. It was so awesome to find that among my stuff. I was like, I got to take this home with me to see like that 2021 and the 1991 one. That is 29 in a row. If they they better make a 2021 one just so I can have 30 years.
Come on, Disney. There's got to be some place to put like scans of all that great art up just for archive's
sake.
Be
out there too. But I should scan the. I wouldn't scan my 93 one because it's too ugly, but I should scan the other three. Like they're still in pretty good shape. But yes, that was the Simpsons fun for me on my holiday break.
Oh, one last thing. I forgot that I said that I watched The Return of the Jedi.
Oh, you'd never
I
seen
finally
that before,
watched it.
Right.
I can't say I've never seen it before anymore. But I've seen it. It's fine. And a very strange movie. I mean, has anyone ever talked about the Ewoks? I don't think it's ever happened on a podcast.
I don't think so.
I did enjoy it for how weird it was. I like how it's just a bunch of dumb Muppety fun and a real goof-em-up adventure.
You know, both Return of the Jedi and Rise of Skywalker, feel very similar in how they want to rush to the end. They're like, we gotta wrap this up. We have too many dangling threads. So characters kind of rush through explanations of things.
Yeah, Obi-Wan. I mean, I feel like so lame making fun of Obi-Wan Kenobi in this movie because it's like 40 years old, this movie, but it's like, wow, that sucks. Him appearing, but like, I didn't say he was dead. I said he was, his name is Fred. You misheard me, actually.
These things have been joked about for
so long.
I'm sorry, I can't remember who said it, but somebody had this great joke about, like, the ghost sits down. Like, yeah. He needs, like, and then the ghost sits down to explain things. Like, when he appears as a force in, God, this is just ancient Star Wars comedy, but in episode 4, he's just a voice. In episode 5, he appears for like flashes of a second, like that you're supposed to think, did I hallucinate things or did I see a force ghost? And then in episode 6, it's like, he's hanging around. He's like, hey, I'm sorry. It was actually this.
Yes. Again, I don't want to go too far into this because what new jokes can you make? But I will say that last month in December, We Hate Movies had a very good episode about Return of the Jedi. And the other two are on their Patreon. So they have one for the entire original trilogy now. And they're all like 3 hours long. So if you like our long podcast, I recommend you listen to theirs. They actually come up with new Star Wars jokes because they're very funny.
That's their We Love Movies episodes because they don't hate them.
It's been a great month for We Hate Movies in December.
Yeah.
And always. Who am I kidding?
Why don't we talk a little bit about Simpsons news that broke this month? There's only two cool things. One is that they previewed that Artie Ziff is coming back to marry Marge's clone, apparently.
Okay.
He has cloned Marge and is going to marry her. That is the preview image.
I mean, I love John Lovitz, and it was funny because Al Jean on Twitter will often like post a screenshot with his phone of like the episode that they're mixing that will be up, you know, the following weekend. And John Lovitz retweeted him and was like, yes, bring back the critic, because that's all he wants now.
Yeah, which is, yeah, as Mike Reese joked, he's like, he never wanted to do the critic the whole time, and now 30 years later he's like, critic,
it's the only game in town for him.
Yeah, I mean, nobody else wants to see anything else he's doing.
They could do it for Netflix or Hulu or everyone's making shows nobody wants. Make that another one.
I think they could have a Crackle original still because Sony's got a piece of it. That's think that's why.
Again, like if you were on a platform like ABC or Fox in the 90s, there's enough of a fan base there to make like one season of a streaming show.
People all remember it.
Yeah
and thankfully don't remember the webisodes.
Oh god. Except for us on our limited edition series, the great finale. We watch it so you don't have to, but yes, he's coming back.
And there was also a new, I think Llewellyn Sinclair might be in the episode too. I think it's not just Artie, but other previous voices. Also, of cool Simpsons gifts I saw on the internet, there was a guy who, a really cool husband, who made a Raspberry Pi USB stick thing. Well, it's more of a rectangle shape. It was called The Dud, and it just, for his wife, plays random episodes from seasons 1 through 10. You just plug it in, and it plays it on a TV or a monitor. And it sounded really cool. It was really nice, and it has a picture. It's a door, and then you open it on the front,
so,
and The Dud is there.
And it just plays a random episode from the classic, quote-unquote,
yes,
seasons?
Yes, from the classic episodes. Yeah, that was really cool. And unfortunately, by tweeting about it, I think Disney's going to shut him down.
Oh, poor guy. He's dead now.
And as listeners know, it was the 30th anniversary of the premiere of The Simpsons last month. That's why we did our whole roasting on an open fire thing, and why we're coming back to season one this week. You're going to hear it within a few days on the Patreon. But for those 30th anniversaries, three different sites, major sites, did their own top blank Simpsons episodes.
I mean, for the most part, they asked some good people, but I was confused why nobody asked us. And I'm not saying this to be egotistical or to feel entitled, but I think, I mean, we are the dominant Simpsons podcast at this point.
I think so, too.
And Allie Gertz pointed this out on Twitter. Like, nobody asked, like, a woman what she thought either. Just, like, you could have asked them. They also wrote a book, but I was looking at one of these lists. I'm sorry, I forget which one. And they asked, like, John Ortved what he thought. And I mean, like, he wrote a book, but that was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It's like, is that what they think makes you an expert, just writing a book? So, yeah.
I guess that's...
I feel a bit slighted by all this.
Yeah. 300 episodes of a podcast. Shrug.
Yeah.
So let's go on the CNET one first, their top five, if we may live review it. Their number five is One Fish, Two Fish, Blowfish, Bluefish, which, that wouldn't be in my top five. But I think they also have to, they're like, it can't all be from season 5 to 7 or season 4 to 7. But then number 4, A Star Is Burns. Like, huh. I mean, season 6 is good.
Well, we did that one and we thought like, oh, so many memes came from this, but as a story, it just doesn't really hold up.
Yeah. I mean, it's the best of the Critic Satellite episodes though. But, number 3, Homer's Enemy. And I can fucks with that a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. You can,
it's up there.
You can sell me on that. Number 2, Homer's Phobia. A really good episode, but I mean, like, better than any season 4 episode? I don't know. Or season 5 episode? Like, better than Rosebud? Or,
yeah, yeah.
And then number 1, I Love Lisa.
Huh, yeah, sure. Yeah, it's a safe choice.
This is a mushier list, too. Not a jokier list, I think, CNET's.
So I'm not sure what the results are of the other lists you're going to talk about, Henry. But what I did notice over the past decade is that Last Exit to Springfield is no longer regarded by many people as the best episode. It's no longer the definitive number 1, which I find interesting, because when we did that one again for the podcast, I was like, this is kind of a weak late season 4 episode. There are some very good bits in it, but it is super sloppy. A lot of the humor is like Family Guy-ish kind of humor, and it's weird that that became, like, if you ask someone in like 2002, they'd be like, oh yeah, Last Exit to Springfield, but now 20 years later, things have changed a lot.
On the commentary, they are so direct about, like, this is everybody's number 1 episode. Like, it's on the top of all these lists. I think people have come to re-explore those feelings on it. And on actually Time Magazine's top 10, not one appearance of that episode either, actually. That's,
yeah, that could be the one I did read. I'm like, really? Wow, things have really changed. I think the conversation just keeps changing. What is the number 1 episode?
So there, I'll just go through the whole 10 here. Rosebud at number 10, good choice. Cape Fear, which is funny. It's like, those are almost back-to-back episodes.
That's true, yeah.
Cape Fear and Rosebud, both good choices. Number 8, Homer's Enemy. Number 7, The Mysterious Voyage of Homer. Number 6, Deep Space Homer, which I can see that, but I don't think it's as strong an episode as folks remember it.
Famously polarizing within the writing staff.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Number 5, Homer at the Bat. Understandable. I think that's a good one. This is them being unpredictable. It feels like somebody told them, you have to have something after the year 2000.
Kill the alligator and run.
Number 4 is The President Wore Pearls, the season 15 episode that has Michael Moore in it.
Is that the Evita parody?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I feel like that was them just being like unpredictable. Like, number 3, Treehouse of Horror 5, the season 6 one. I think it's your favorite Treehouse. It's second to 4. 4 is my favorite Treehouse.
Treehouse of 5 is season 6.
Yes, yep, yeah.
I do love
that's
that one.
That's the Shinning one, yeah. Number 2, Itchy and Scratchy and Poochie Show. That's a good pick at number 2, I think. And number 1, a safe choice, Marge versus the Monorail.
Oh, yeah. I think that is like the other default choice now that Last Exit is no longer the default choice. It's like, oh, yeah, Monorail. What I did notice, though, is that no mention of Mother Simpson.
Yeah, you know, nobody's remembering
that one. I feel
that
one is so solid and emotional that I don't know why it's not appearing. Or Lisa's Wedding.
Yeah, oh my gosh, Lisa's Wedding. Yeah. Or, you know, if I were to make this list, I would push hard for, actually, let's say what our number ones would have been on a list like this after this last one. The 100 best episodes by Vulture. I'm starting at number 100. No, I'm just kidding. Let's just go to the top 5, top 10 on the Vulture list here. The top 5 on Vulture's list is number 5, Lisa's Substitute. A good pick. A heartfelt episode. They're number 4, Itchy, Scratchy, and Poochie Show. They're number 3, Marge versus the Monorail. Vulture's number 2, Last Exit to Springfield.
Those
they're still carrying that.
Von Drukes.
And number 1, Cape Fear.
All right.
So these are season 4 boys here. They're top 3. Cape Fear technically broadcast season 5, but production season 4. These writers, I feel, definitely grew up in season 4 and remember those the strongest.
Welcome to Safe Town.
I know. It's like, I don't know. I think Rosebud's better than Cape Fear. Like, Cape Fear is so goofy, but Rosebud's a better crazy episode.
I mean, my number 1 episode is Who Shot Mr. Burns Part 1. That should be on one of these lists.
Yeah, it's really shocking. It's not. Yeah. Like, I don't understand that. I mean, is it Could it just be people who misremember, just like, oh, and then it was the baby? They just remember the joke by McClure or something.
Part two is not nearly as good as part one, but part one is like so funny and packed with jokes and so many great character bits. God, I love it.
If I were to shout out one that didn't get any love on here, it would be Bart's Comet. Mm. I think that might be, other than Who Shot Mr. Burns Part 1, that is my favorite episode of The Town, about Springfield as a whole. Like, Homer is a great asshole in it. There's amazing animation in it. And it introduces the Super Friends.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And Big Butt Skinner. But,
and a nice emotional moment at the end.
Yeah.
All these ones that are really funny with nice emotions at the end don't seem to be winning these polls.
Yeah. And I've always said Mr. Plow, which that is like, I think that's the best of season four, really.
It's up there for sure. That and like Homer the Heretic, I think.
Oh, yeah. And then last thing I'll say is, I think if I were to pick the funniest episode of Simpsons, it always makes me laugh. The old funniest is, that was not any of these, Homie the Clown. I think that is the funniest episode.
Oh, no, yeah. I think you're right. Just like nonstop, like the speed holes and so many good jokes.
Ned getting shots, all of the wealthy dowager murder. Like, God.
They're supposed to be baggy.
Seattle. But yes, those are the lists that are out there.
Mm, check my medical alert bracelet. So, some final. I'm sorry. I didn't even do the accent for that one. I guess some final news. Again, thanks to everybody for being so nice about our podcast schedule.
Yes.
Again, no negativity. Everyone was like, yes, you guys are awesome. Please don't work too hard. And we're comfortable with these changes. We can catch up now. And I didn't see one naysayer or one, you know, stick in the mud about this. And we're so happy. I didn't predict it because our audience is awesome, but it was just so nice to have that justified for me.
Yeah, you know, when you make any changes, you worry a little bit about response to it. So it was great, everybody's reaction. Thanks so much for understanding, and we're going to work so hard on all these things. We're going to make so many quality things. We're going to be winning like you never know. I was worried I was starting to sound like somebody there, but yes, I'm really looking forward to all the stuff we're doing in the new year, especially, you know, we've got some great What a Cartoons coming, and the season one, I am so excited to re-explore season one, and we've got some really cool guests already lined up.
Oh yeah,
for
you're gonna love
one.
It. Some of our biggest guests that some we've had before on the show, and also the final news item. In case you forgot, the holidays have been very busy, but we're gonna remind you that January 14th is at 8 p.m.
Yes,
8 p.m. at Piano Fight in San Francisco. That will be our Sketch Fest show with Jordan Morris.
Yes.
And we're going to be exploring the greatest hits of season one and some other fun things too. So yes, please go to the Sketchfest website and buy tickets now. I have not checked since I went on break, but they were selling fast. So you want to get in as soon as you can.
Yep. And there we will be selling too, the wonderful poster that Nina Matsumoto made for this. Like, she,
and she'll be there.
Yes. Oh, wow. Say hi to her in person, guys. Be nice. Say hi. Her art for it is so great. She drew me, you, and Jordan in season one style. We look amazing.
And
we're
I was
all
happy
miscolored.
That, I was happy that he got it, like, immediately. Yeah. We showed it to him. He was like, oh, that's great.
Instead of, like, being insulted, like, you think I look like like, what a nice... I mean, Jordan Morris, I think we teased him in our last community podcast because it hadn't been official yet, but Jordan just reached out to us, like, out of the blue through, like, a mutual friend saying, hey, if I'm going to be in town for Sketchfest, would you want a guest? We're like, sure,
that's awesome. Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's number one, it saves us work, but number two, he's like the one of the godfathers of podcasting.
Yes, it's Jordan Jesse Go.
Yeah,
ran a long time, so it's I'm so excited to, you know, meet him and podcast with him on January 14th at 8 p.m. in San Francisco, and it'll be released as a regular episode too, in case you guys are concerned about that. But yeah, look forward to it, and we will see you there for a celebration of the 30th anniversary of this first season, the oft-overlooked first season of The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm. So now we're going to move on to your questions and comments from the episodes from December of 2019. So up first, we have the Talking Simpsons questions and comments, and the first episode is The Old Man and the Sea Student, and Joe Hodgson says, my only enduring memory of Izzy, the Olympic mascot, comes from GamePro. That little guy was in advertisements constantly, and he was also on some contest. It was one of those word jumbles you had to complete and then mail in. If you answered it correctly, you were sent a new puzzle to compete, only this one had an entrance fee. My friends and I were entering it in hopes of winning a prize Panasonic 3DO. Our desire to have one was driven entirely by a screenshot of Doom for the system, which depicted a realistic-looking demon thing. Unbeknownst to us, that was almost certainly from a video clip in the game, and the actual graphics were probably the same or worse than what we were accustomed to on PC. I don't think any of us fell for the scheme, though, and we stopped with just the free puzzle, unlike Doug Funny, who cashed in his savings bond to continue entering a similar puzzle. As a result, I just think of Izzy as a jerk-ass grifter who preys on naive children. And do you remember those puzzles? Those, like,
I think I do. I have a hazy memory of those in gaming magazines.
What a scam. No, I mean, there's a reason you don't see them anymore. But like for a few years, it was like, okay, finish this puzzle, and then you pay more to keep entering like further competitions of crossword puzzles.
I feel like some laws changed to get rid of those things.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Like, and the poor Izzy has to be torn down by this association with these scams.
I remember the coverage of that game, though, and I hated his design so much.
Yeah, I mean, he's an ugly thing. I'm still so sad that since usually something happens after we talk about something on a podcast, but his old cartoon has not shown up yet. But also about Izzy, Kaiser Beam says, great that you brought up the 1996 Atlanta Olympics, because I actually attended those Olympics. The 1996 Olympics was the first real huge news that six-year-old me became aware of, because it was happening in my home state of Georgia, and I thought it was the coolest thing ever because, at the time, I had a huge obsession with geography and learning about other countries, and the idea that people from all over the world coming to Atlanta to compete in the games had to be the biggest event in history. My dad accepted an invite from some of his old yuppie college friends to see the athletics competition on the day before the closing ceremonies, and he took me to see it with them. I remember being very excited seeing Olympics in person, and also not wanting the United States to win the gold because I thought that it would be boring. I also remember impressing my dad's friends by being a weird six-year-old who knew the flag of Burundi looked like, as well as tasting root beer for the very first time. It was only a few years later that I realized that I had experienced a once-in-a-lifetime event. I didn't ask for any Izzy merch, though. I just wanted pins from other countries' flags. Again, weird six-year-old.
They looked down at you and said, one day you will be a YouTuber.
Yes. Yeah.
Whatever that means.
This extreme attention to detail will get you far in that world.
And before we move on to Monty Can't Buy Me Love, I also saw in the comments someone pointed out that NRBQ did the theme for the pits. Of course they did.
Of course.
How did I not immediately realize that?
I should have just assumed that instead of going like, man, who wrote this song for the pits? Like, duh.
Mike Scully giving his buddies work. We love Mike Scully.
I mean, hey, I hope to be his buddy who gets work from him someday.
You know, Mike Scully is so supportive of us.
Yeah.
When we were really relaunching our Patreon or revamping it, he was like liking tweets about it. I'm like, Mike Scully, you're so sweet.
Nice guy.
Yeah.
Man, no, I can't. I mean, hey, he's got a new show coming out next month.
Yeah. Duncanville.
Yeah, Duncanville.
So up next, we have Monty Can't Buy Me Love, and Joe Hodgson is back to say that Branson is still out there trying to cultivate the image of the quote-unquote fun billionaire. My cousin and her husband were on vacation around one of his many private islands, and while they were out jet skiing or on a rented boat, they encountered Mr. Branson, who invited them to his island for drinks and merriment. And they took him up on that offer and apparently had a good time. Now, I don't mean to sound like I'm from Shelbyville, but I can objectively say my cousin and her husband are an attractive couple, so who knows if that played into Branson's generosity that day, but the whole thing certainly feels on brand for the guy. And this is me saying, Bob Mackey saying, I think he was angling for a threesome
with your relatives. So. I think he gets a threesome whenever he feels like it.
He just goes and is like, hey, you, come on,
yeah,
we're going back.
We're going to I own an island. I mean, you know, when you hear billionaire-owned private island, it conjures different things these days.
Oh, at least they were of age.
Yeah, no, that sounds like a consensual island in encounter, and I wish them nothing but the best. That's all I'll say. Jacob Reed says, oh, we definitely have a Stern knockoff in our area, and I know relatives that love him. He really drives home the idea that he is fine with being an ugly old man, and at the beginning of every show has dead air representing a moment of silence for loved ones that have died. Jeez, heavy. this is Henry real quick. You're supposed to be liking fart jokes, and they start with, like, here's all my loved ones have died. Like,
that reminds me of, I think I talked about this on a recent podcast, but there was a Carlos Mencia stand-up special that just all, like, racist jokes and poop jokes and fart jokes. In the end, there's just, like, this really dark and maudlin thing, and just, like, it could all be over in a moment, bro. Just like that. He drops the mic and, like, walks off the stage. Jesus. It sucks. It's bad.
Okay, anyway, resuming the comment. This would be fine on its own, but before this reflection period, he has a disclaimer that says if you are offended by it, then get lost. Don't know how it would be offensive to have that silence in your show, but he really is just letting the audience know what type of man they're about to listen to. In all honesty, I've heard segments from his deplorable program, and he uses the N-word freely and frequently to describe black people that he hates.
Wow.
But also prefaces it with not to be confused with fine black people in our community. This is something I've been dealing with in the Midwest for a long time, which is just racists trying to get away with using the N-word while declaring themselves to not be racist. Other than that, he's just a standard Stern wannabe that claims he can do and say anything, whatever hateful things he wants because of free speech. Like, just freely throwing out the N-bomb like that? That's crazy.
Is he one of those, it means ignorant person kind of thing?
That's nuts.
I bet like he is.
That, I remember Dr. Laura got in a lot of trouble for that, where she's just like, yeah, I have black friends and I say it to them. And the black friend in question she was describing was an employee who's like her bodyguard. Yeah. And she's like, he's fine with me saying it.
I mean, Papa John said it once and now he's eating 40 pizzas in 30 days.
I can't believe a guy who continually is on the radio just says the N-word all the time. That is shocking.
And that reminds me, since we did the, what's his name? Jerry Rude?
Oh, yes. Jerry Rude, the toilet crew.
The toilet gang or whatever. Yeah. Toilet, but who knows? But since we did that episode, Don Imus died.
Yes, yeah. And Bathroom Bunch.
There we go. And I would go back into like the late 80s, early 90s history. You should look up his feud with Howard Stern. Like, Howard Stern was at his funniest when he was trolling other radio guys who were stealing his bits and just like openly mocking them and putting on like these big open displays about how awful they were.
Yeah.
That's the most fun Stern stuff. Now
I
he's a tired old
shit.
Man.
Yeah. No, I saw people saying, like, it's sad that he became Imus. Like, just he just became that guy. Not as racist. No way.
So up next, we have Simpsons roasting on an open fire. And Kat Hegberg says, what a treat to find in my podcast feed. Also, regarding the initial Snowball 2 joke, when I was a kid, I had a black cat named Snowball. My little sister was completely obsessed with the Hanna-Barbera movie Heidi song. I believe you mentioned this in a previous What a Cartoon, Bonkers, perhaps? Noting no one saw this. I did, hundreds of times. It was a free Blockbuster kids rental. My sister rented it every single weekend. I think the director or the creator, I think the creator of the new Bonkers.
He worked on Heidi's Song?
Heidi's Song was like one of Hanna-Barbera's movies.
Okay. Wow. I didn't know. Yeah. I never saw it. Still haven't seen it.
So she goes on to say, there was a cat named Snowball in the movie, which was white. So my family adopted a kitten, which was black. My then 3-year-old sister insisted that we name the cat Snowball as an homage to her favorite movie. My family didn't start watching The Simpsons until season 2. So we missed the initial airing of the Christmas special. And everyone was delighted to eventually learn that they too had a black cat named Snowball, just like us. When I finally saw Simpsons roasting on an open fire, I remember being so disappointed that Snowball 2's predecessor was a white kitty and they weren't just weirdos who had a black cat named Snowball like my family.
That's such a cute story. I like that. It's one of those things that's just like an in-joke that grows in your family. Of just like, well, we all know why it's Snowball, but to outsiders, it just seems weird. But man, that kind of connection of like, wow, they're just like our family with Snowball. Until you learn the backstory, they only explain in one episode.
I like how we have to go back and say, oh, that was a joke. When you see the black cat, the joke is his name Snowball because the original cat was dead and white.
Yeah, so many one-off jokes Matt Groening came up with that just were not touched again. Shy Ranger says on Roasting on an Open Fire, you have said Eek the Cat twice now, once in this and once in Kidney Trouble. Reference it one more time and the ritual will be complete. I mean, I do think we've got an Eek the Cat, What a Cartoon someday in our future.
It never hurts to help.
Oh, God. that's Bill Kopp himself, one of the three creators or original animators on The Simpsons shorts.
I remember liking Eek the Cat. I also like the spinoff Terrible Thunder Lizards.
Yeah, I loved them both. I watched them all the time. I think my brother, he preferred Terrible Thunder Lizards to Eek the Cat. In both cases, it's about like codependent relationships destroying people.
Yeah, I think I like Thunder Lizards because it was so mean.
Yeah.
And the two cavemen, one just hated the other one so much. Sort of like a SpongeBob and Squidward kind of relationship between them.
Yeah. Charlie Adler's character is totally Squidward.
Yeah.
Totally was.
And his, I think his catchphrase was, "When will the hurting stop?"
That is correct. Yes, yeah. That is what he'd say.
Wow. Oh, great cartoon. So moving on to They Saved Lisa's Brain, the great podcast with Podcast The Ride. Check out their podcast, please. So Alec Whitney says, dog racing is basically over as of this year, which is kind of cool, honestly. I say kind of only because it should have been sooner. Similarly to Henry, Connecticut, for whatever reason, had a ton of dog racing tracks. So when I saw it in The Simpsons, I just figured it was super normal, albeit super scummy. Deadspin did a great article on it called Dog Racing Died Without a Funeral. So just search Deadspin Dog Racing Died Without a Funeral to find out how it died without a funeral.
Speaking of things that died, Deadspin, RIP, that website. That was a good website, but I should read that article because, yeah, I didn't even know dog racing had stopped in America. I mean, it's good. It was an abusive practice, like in those, I would guess countless greyhounds died needlessly for this machine of death. For gambling, yeah. But I will definitely check that out. Thank you.
Just computer generate the dogs now.
Yeah. I mean, it's random number generators. Just do that. Or have drones race. Have a drone race. Do that. Y2K podcast said about that episode, the radio contest section reminds me of something that happened near where I lived. I live in Manitoba, Canada, where a small town near there named Miami, Manitoba, during one of the Super Bowl radio contests said, you could win tickets to the Super Bowl called in Miami, which they did, but at a bar in Miami, Manitoba, the station got sued by several people, but the station won because they never said which Miami.
No one said Miami.
That is so scummy. Of like,
it's like Hollywood, Florida, or yeah. Paris, Texas. Like, come on.
Though I'd rather go to those two before Miami, Manitoba. I think I'd at least not be freezing there, or there'd be fewer mooses there, or meeses.
Our next episode is 30 Minutes Over Tokyo with Maddie Kopp, and it's our longest episode ever, probably.
I think it is. It might be tied with Poochie.
Could be.
The ad version.
So Brian Horton says, the Chuck Garabedian character reminded me of the King of the Hill character, Dr. Money, that had a similar feel, but with real estate scams, of course, Khan fell for it. That one was based on Tom Vu, who also liked to pose on boats surrounded by women in bikinis in his infomercials. I guess there have been a lot of these kind of guys with similar scams. Yeah, I think it was really the look of the guy I mentioned on that last podcast. I forget his name. I'm sorry. The real life guy. Mm-hmm. And also Tom Vu being on a boat with women. I think it was like a mix of those early 90s scamsters. Mm-hmm.
Though I also do think in voice a little of the dollar sign man, the dollar sign man there too.
He wanted to help you rip off the government.
Yeah,
so good on
him. Good on him. That's why he's still around and these other guys went to jail.
Yeah.
I remember that coin car wash episode with Dr. Money is so funny.
Yes. Okay.
That was a great one. Also on that episode, Kiefer Folsom says, fun fact, this episode contains a crossover between Godzilla and Gamera that has never occurred in movies. Gamera is owned by a different studio who in 2002 approached Toho Studios to create a crossover, but was turned down by Toho. Thinking from an animator's perspective, of course you'd have to do Godzilla for the final joke, but Mothra and Rodan are a moth and a Paradon, while Gamera is essentially a flying turtle with tusks, possibly easier than drawing King Ghidorah. Which I think it would be, probably.
Sounds like it.
But also, it's just fun to see old Gamera flying up there. I mean,
I love him.
Yeah, I love on the Mystery Science Theater box set with Gamera, those movies, they have one extra in there from a guy who's like, I know you guys laugh at Gamera, but his movies are actually good in for what they are. He described showing the recent Gamera movies, like from this millennium, showing them and having Misty's show up to laugh at it, and then like 10, 20 minutes in, they're like, oh, this is actually good. This is just a good movie.
Yeah, when that box set came out, I watched all of them in like a row, and you realize like, oh, these are all kind of connected in a way.
Yeah,
it's interesting to see.
Yeah, but Godzilla and Gamera never coming together. I wonder, maybe we all think it's because of them hurting the emperor in it, but it's really never shown in Japan because having Godzilla on copyrighted screens will get like Toho will destroy that television channel.
That could be it. Even Disney's afraid.
Toho's very aggressive in retaining their copyright, that's for sure.
I know the original SimCity box art had to change their art because they just put Godzilla on it.
Oh, wow.
Like walking through the city.
I mean, that is illegal. Like, yeah. They don't know that character.
It's fair. Let's move on to What a Cartoon comments. Up first, we have the Mickey Mouse cartoon Duck the Halls, that great new special. And Joe Hodgson is back. And he's got good comments, guys. And he says, a good choice for December. I was hoping you guys would do DuckTales Last Christmas as it's a really fun, well-done episode of the show. And it features a wonderful Russi Taylor role. But this is a nice consolation. I love Donald, so I love this cartoon by default. And I love how the performance of Tony Anselmo deteriorates with the character on screen. And then you get the blasphemous Jesus Donald during the climax, which is perfect. I don't really like Funko Pop figurines, but if they made a Donald from that sequence, I'd probably have to buy it.
Yeah, that's thanks for shouting out to that one, especially Anselmo's performance. You know, one other thing I did watch on Disney Plus in the Christmassy mood was Mickey's Christmas Carol, which I hadn't seen in full in a long time. It sucks. Like, well, okay, it looks good, but one, Charlie Nash is dying. You've said this before, and it like he sounds really bad.
Yeah,
as Donald.
I forgot. Yeah, that wasn't Tony yet.
And it's pre Bill Farmer Goofy, so Goofy just doesn't sound right to me. They do have Wayne is Mickey in it, but also it's like 22 minutes to tell Christmas Carol, and so it's just in hyper speed. It's all wrong. At least
I forgot it wasn't an hour long.
Yeah, and Scrooge is Scrooge at least, and the animation level is theatrical quality. I mean, not A-level Disney theatrical quality, but theatrical. And the other plus I'll give to it too is like, oh well, this is before Pete was being played by Jim Cummings, so Pete's not as good voice either. But like, when Pete is revealed to be the wearing a devil pajamas as the Ghost of Christmas Future is like, who do you think, Scrooge, and kicks him in, that's like some good Disney scares.
I prefer the Beavis and Butthead, here lies Beavis, he never scored.
Yeah, no, that's a great one.
That could be for next Christmas. Earmark that.
Okay.
That'll be our Christmas special next Christmas. I can't stick these promises, people.
And Kaiser Beams is back as well with a comment on this episode saying, great episode as always, especially for the start of the holiday season. They are right that Santa's design in this cartoon is based on a Disney cartoon from the 30s. Namely, the 1932 Silly Symphony Santa's Workshop and its sequel, The Night Before Christmas. I recognize that design immediately, thanks to me being both an old cartoon fanatic as well as a Christmas weirdo like Bob.
Excellent.
I think both of those are on Disney Plus as well. We haven't stumped enough for Disney Plus on here. Unlike Home Alone, which is not on there anymore.
One or two.
Yeah, but you can watch three all you want.
Our president should complain about being censored from that. Let's talk about Charlie Brown Christmas next. So Matt Segal says, speaking of aged card bubblegum, back in February of 1990, a friend got two big gifts for his birthday, Mario 3 and some packs of unopened baseball cards from the 60s. Yuck. Being an outgoing child, I jumped to try the gum. For a moment, it was the taste of gum distilled into a moment, then just gray, awful death.
At least it didn't cut your cheek.
No, no. When they do an autopsy on Matt in like 60 years, I'd be like, it was the gum. He could have lived another 5 years.
It's been sitting in your colon since you were 10. John Kerry says about the Christmas special, Bob, you asked why Christmas Time Is Here sounds so melancholy and if it's in a minor key. It's not in a minor key, although there is a line of descending minor chords under the Fun For All That Children Call part. But more than the minor chords, what makes the song sound so melancholy is the very jazzy chord progression and chord choices. The melody and underlying chords use intervals that, outside of jazz, are pretty uncommon. I won't go too deep into jazz harmony, but I'll explain a little. All chords either build tension or relieve tension, resolve, relative to the root key. The same goes for the melody. The melody can land on notes that either increase tension or increase the sense of resolution. This song has crazy amounts of tension in that harmony and very little traditional resolution. The here in Christmas Time Is Here lands on a tritone in relation to the bass note, and the tritone is a very tense interval that you don't normally hear emphasized in popular melodies. Also, the song uses modal interchange and borrowing chords from a scale other than the one you're in. There's even more that I could talk about, but I wouldn't know where to stop. So in short, the song is very jazzy, and jazz uses a lot of tension notes in chords and melody. So there, that is the in-depth reasoning of that song.
Thank you, John. I did understand some of that. I figured it was all like, well, this is all song math. That's making me sad.
That you can just express songs in math. It can be depressing, I guess. Yes.
So thanks
just
for all
like that.
That
song.
Thanks for the info dump. I had no idea that was going on. Now I know why I'm sad from that song.
At long last.
Up next, we have Craig of the Creek, Under the Overpass. We had Matt Burnett, one of the creators of the show, on that podcast. Thanks again to Matt for being on it. So Nervous Rex says, I just recently started watching Craig of the Creek. There are a lot of reasons to love this show, but for me, Jeff Rosenstock's music is a big part of it. I'm a huge fan of his solo work in prior bands, Arrogant Sons of Bitches and Bomb the Music Industry. For anyone who's curious, check out Three Cheers for Disappointment by ASOB, one of the best ska punk albums of all time. Speaking of ska revival shows, I'm eagerly awaiting your episode on Kablam.
Oh, I guess that is a very ska show, isn't
it? Is.
Kablam. It's so good they're teaching kids about ska. Right after we recorded with Matt, they released a parody of their approach to the poke rap.
Oh,
where they name all the Creek kids, name all the kids in the Creek. Like, that's a song, but it's ska. So they're also like skanking as they sing it.
Oh,
it's a really fun video. I'll show it to you after this, Bob.
I wonder if the Aquabats are on their program yet.
They've only had one real life band. I forget the name of them, but it's something you can hope for in the future. Also about Craig of the Creek, Eve of the Stars says, I was inspired to do a rewatch since you guys were covering it this week. It's definitely one of my favorite ongoing cartoons, and it seriously has the best character design. There's so much personality in every character's appearance, and they're so varied and diverse. It also evokes a sense of warm nostalgia for the simple days of childhood more than any other show. I think the characters express themselves so much, like they all are these like kind of stereotypes of kids you remember, but there's little extra to each of them. Like even the annoying rules loving Boy Scouts who ruin all the fun, or like the bike kids who never get off their bikes, or even the garbage king. There's so much fun characterization to all of them.
I've been enjoying the little I've seen of it a lot. It's just not as available as some other shows. Yeah. So I'm hoping HBO Max.
We'll
be talking about that in the future.
Yeah, for $15 a month. What a deal.
But they just added like 20 episodes of this next show onto Hulu, so you can check out more of it. That's OKKO. And we talk with Ian Jones Quartey and Toby Jones about the season finale. Yeah, season finale.
Well, series.
Series finale,
finale.
Sorry,
yes.
Yeah. It is, technically, it's a season.
Yes.
I got you there. So Shy Ranger says, I actually got interested in OKKO thanks to this podcast. The very first Talking Simpsons episode you did with Ian and Toby, listening to them talking got me interested, and I pretty much binge all of OKKO where I was up to that point, and then I was watching up until the end. So yes, awesome. I'm glad we can spread the word about the show.
Yeah, it was a big reason I wanted them on. Also, just because I really enjoyed their show, and I had I hadn't met Toby before. What a cool guy. But I'd met Ian before. I've said it before on podcasts, but like when, you know, Talking Simpsons was just relatively new, a year old. I was at Comic-Con 2016 and got to do, you know, a roundtable interview of folks who worked on Steven Universe. And Ian was one of the first people I interviewed. And then when it was over, he was like, hey, thanks a lot. You know, I'm a big fan of your podcast and Retronauts. And I was like, what? What? Like, so...
Yeah, they're so nice. I think when the first time I met Ian, he talked to me about Something Awful articles I wrote a long time ago. And I was like, people, you like this? Wow.
I look every day at the Ian art that you asked Ian to make for me.
That's your character design if you ever appear in one of his shows.
Yes, I love that I'm wearing the Marge smudged t-shirt print in there. And our final comment for this month's community podcast, also about OKKO, is from Charles Morgan, who says, amazing episodes, guys. We've been an OKKO household since the shorts were on the terrible, terrible Cartoon Network app. It was great hearing Ian and Toby just speak candidly about the emotionality of having to end their show. I assume this episode was recorded just prior to Simpsons roasting with them on because everyone seemed a little emotionally spent at the start. Thanks for the great episode and for everything you guys do. And it wasn't right before we actually took about an hour and a half to eat ramen together and just like chill, but it definitely was. It seemed to me like it was was an experience for Ian and Toby to go back over the end of the series one more time.
It was nice to have a break between podcasts. But usually when they're recording with us, it's all day because we talk a lot.
They're like, well, we have to do two and we have to talk for 3 hours on each of them. So,
and they always want to come back, which is great.
It's so great. And we're always apologizing to each other about, I'm sorry so long. They're like, no, I'm sorry. And also that Ian, I mean, both of them were making time for us like in the lead up to the holidays, but especially Ian had just gotten married two, three days earlier.
Yes. Also, like, congrats to Ian and Rebecca. Yeah, so nice.
Congratulations. Yes. Yeah. And I can't wait to see what Ian and Toby make in the future. It's probably a ways off, but I'm glad they're still working on cool cartoons.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll have them back to talk about it.
For sure.
So again, thank you for joining us for another episode of Talk to the Audience. Once again, this will be out on the free feed next month, and we apologize for the slight lateness. We're still, you know, in recovery mode from our vacation and getting back on our feed and catching up and everything. So we took a few more days than we usually do for these, but it'll be out on time every month from now on because it'll not just be a regular week, regular monthly podcast in a defined slot every month.
And I think you guys are going to enjoy it. We'll do, if you like the slightly looser beginning here too, where me and Bob just catch up on things, you know, we might do a little more of that in the when it goes public too.
Sure.
Just because we can't just talk about Disney Plus every month.
We have too many opinions about lots of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, do you see this almost turned into a Star Wars podcast?
Oh,
and we had to like step back from the edge.
I was holding back because for the past 2 weeks, everyone has done their Star Wars podcast, and I'm like, you got to be all Star Wars out by now. We can't do any more of this.
But when you're nerds of our age who talk into microphones, the pull of the force towards Star Wars conversation, you can't resist it.
Yes, I understand. But yes, thank you so much for joining us, folks, and we will see you next month for an all new, or actually later this month rather, for an all new Talk to the Audience. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you then.
Wow, infotainment.